Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your computer is locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the unique personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so special. The COVID crisis has changed so much in our country, and indeed, this county too. The operations our radio station have been reworked. With an abundance of caution, we can no longer use studio equipment to record our shows. Individual DJs have indeed created their own shows by creeping into the studio and doing it in solitary confinement. But those of us who have live guests on their shows have not been able to invite them to the studio to record. Needless to say, that's changed a few things. Now we have a technological workaround where we create and record the show without even visiting the world headquarters in a trailer in the parking lot of Mountain View School. It's true that our audio quality is not up to our usual standards. It drives the editor of this show, John McPherson, nuts. But the show must go on. So please bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what we usually deliver. Consider the content. The purpose of Our Town is to share the stories of some of the fascinating people who make up this community. But the show's only a half hour long, definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. Consider it a synopsis. We'll try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. The past few weeks have brought some remarkable changes to our lives. Now more than ever, don't you wonder who the people are you see around? Who was that bozo striding the wrong way down the one-way aisles at Safeway the other day? What was he thinking? And who were those people taking in the sun over sandwiches at Howell's Sandwich Shop the other day? That deck is one of the best spots to watch the harbor, the ferry going in and out, the sailboats, even the otters. I'm so glad that Howell's is finally open again. Even though it's at reduced capacity with tables spaced far, it's great to see our town slowly coming back to life. Visit our local restaurants, visit our local shops. Another Port Townsend shop that's struggling back to normal is Winwood's Gallery and Bead Studio in downtown on Water Street. The owner of that shop is with me today. Lois Finarchik, the owner of Winwood's, has been selling her art around town for, I don't know, roughly 40 years. So tell me, Lois, are you a local girl born and bred in Port Townsend?
Not quite. I came here when I was 20 years old in 1976.
Wow. And what were the circumstances? What brought you here?
I met this man back east outside Philadelphia where I grew up who was born and raised here in Port Townsend. We married, traveled around a bit, and came back home here.
Aha. Was this one of these magic young love swept you off your feet kind of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you really have an idea what you were getting into coming to a small town like this?
No, I'm from a small town outside Philadelphia, but no, when I told my family I was going to marry this man and move out here to the Seattle area, all they said to me was to be extra careful because there were still wild Indians out here.
Well, that's true even today. We know that. Many wild people around here. I've heard some stories about Port Townsend in the 70s. Can you describe it? What was it like? What was downtown like?
Downtown was great. It was quiet. Dogs slept in the street. There were a couple of galleries. There was a restaurant, a bookstore, a gift shop, the town tavern, where, of course, everybody went when they first came to Port Townsend. It was amazing. We had potlucks in the middle of Water Street. We would throw a parade whenever anybody felt like throwing a parade. It was great. I miss those days.
Now, I've heard about the infamous town tavern, and from what I understand, lots of people simply lived there. It was sort of a, not quite a commune, but something approaching that. Did you actually live there at any point?
No.
No?
No, I'm sorry I didn't live there. I hung out there a bit, but no, my in-laws were original homesteaders to the area, so we had a family home that we stayed in, and then we stayed in the family cabin out at Beckett Point.
Cool. Jobs were probably not plentiful here at that point in time. They're not plentiful here today. So how were you going to get by?
I did gardening for my Auntie Evelyn. I cleaned bathrooms around town because that was a job lawyers and everybody didn't want to do for their offices. I babysat. I painted lettering on boats. I did a little house cleaning. I worked the shops. I did just about everything.
And so what was your husband doing at that point in time?
He actually was active duty military. He was stationed at the Naval Hospital in Bremerton.
I see. Was the Hood Canal Bridge operational in those days?
No. It was when I first came here in 76. I think it went down, in 81? When the bridge went down, we actually moved to Bremerton for a short time until we could afford to have a car on both sides of the bridge so we wouldn't have to wait for the ferry. It was real easy to wait two or three boats across the canal, especially during the summer.
Yeah, and that would have made a really rough commute without the bridge there. What sort of art were you doing at that point in your life?
A lot of realism, a lot of pencil drawings. That's pretty much what I sold here. I made jewelry, did beadwork, knitted, crocheted, but mostly it was my pencil drawings I sold.
And where did you sell them? You didn't have a shop just yet, did you?
No, I sold them through the People's Guild, which was a cooperative gallery that has the building that's now Flagship Landing. Uh-huh. Safeway had just moved out to over to the location where Clipper Mercantile is now, and the building was in horrid shape, but they rented it to us for $100 a month, and we did a gallery.
What fun. Was it the kind of gallery where different artists had their own little space, or was it all sort of mixed together?
It was pretty much mixed together. We had put some walls up in there so that paintings could show from different angles and things, but it was pretty much just we were all in there together.
Okay. Were you a mom at that point?
No, I wasn't a mother till 1982.
When did you get it in your mind that you wanted to have a shop? How did that evolve?
The minute I stepped foot in Port Townsend, I knew I wanted a shop. I knew it.
Lots of people dream about things, but not that many people actually follow through. How did you manage to pull it off?
I worked for a bunch of other people in Port Townsend. I think there was one period in my life where I had a key to almost every retail business on Water Street, and I worked for everybody. So I gathered experience, and I decided one day to open a shop. So I walked up and down Water Street to look in other shops for people that might have spaces that they would sublease to me. And I found two places, and the best one ended up being Great Expectations in the Lewis Building, the 600 block. So I had a 12 by 12 room in there for $150 a month, and I opened a shop.
What were you selling then?
I started the original shop selling my paintings, my hand-sewn banners, and my jewelry.
Okay. How did it begin to grow? What were the directions that it first took?
My customers wanted supplies. They wanted beads, they wanted tools, they wanted to know how I made things, they wanted classes. So I let them leave me, and I kind of fulfilled their wishes and did what they wanted me to do, which was fun.
That's a great strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But you only
mm-hmm.
had 12 by 12 for your space.
It was tight.
How long did it take before you expanded that space?
I think it was 2 years, 2.5 or 3 years before I was friends with Keith Jackson, who owned the James and Hastings building, and he invited me to have a space in there, so I moved down the street.
I was looking at your business card, which is a very creative card, but it identifies you as owner, jeweler, and artist. How do you juggle those roles?
Oh, man. I work all the time, but my work is my play, so really I play all the time. I do all those things. Currently, this is my beginning of my fourth year without owning my own gallery. I'm hoping that maybe rents will go down in Port Townsend and I'll be able to have a gallery again just for my paintings. But I'm pretty happy with the way things are right now.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today, Lois Fenarchik, the owner of Winwood's Gallery and Bead Studio on Water Street. She was telling me about her younger days as more of a free-floating artist. Then, actually quite young, she opened her own shop, which was 12 by 12. Got to start somewhere. She sounds like one of those retailers who actually really listens to what her customers want. And her customers wanted things, beads, supplies. They wanted art too, of course. Tell me, in your world, the retail world here in Port Townsend, let's not jump ahead to the pandemic, but let's say in more normal times, what is the ebb and flow? Surely the summer is busier than the winter, but how does it break down?
Well, the summer is definitely busier. August being the busiest month, followed by September normally. It can be pretty dead from January through early May. It really doesn't pick up. In the summer months, I don't see many locals unless they have company, and then they bring all their company downtown to shop and hang out and introduce me. I've met so many of my customers, families, and friends. And then when summer's over, after wooden boat sails away, locals start appearing again and are buying craft supplies and things for their fall and winter. And then January, February, March, April, May, it's pretty sleepy.
Do you have largely a local crowd during the bulk of the year? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I do. I think I have a big local following. I do have a lot of local business because not only do I do the bead work and sell the supplies, but I do repair work, and I'm such a part of my customers' lives, and they're such a part of mine. It's everything. It's everything.
Some of our listeners may not have ever been in your shop. So why don't you describe it by just saying it's a bead shop? That's not really, that's part of it, but that's not really what it is. Describe what you have there on that floor.
My shop has jewelry that I make, including the metal work I do on jewelry. I do a lot of silver work. I have display cases filled with my jewelry. That pretty much is the first half of the shop. Then you walk through a little archway, and from there on back, it's all supplies. So it's loose check glass beads, Japanese seed beads, needles, pliers, books for inspiration, gemstones, pearls, you name it. We have beads from diamonds to plastic. We try to help everybody. It's continually evolving. I travel a lot, or I used to travel a lot, and buy lots of beads. And my friends do beads. My family does beads. Everybody I know does beads.
And in the back, you have yarn, too.
Yeah, I have a little yarn shop. When I first came to Port Townsend, I really thought I'd have a yarn shop first. There was a great yarn shop in Port Townsend sometime in the late 70s, early 80s, so I never got around to opening that. So I have a space in the back that's Diva Yarn, and I sell yarn and fiber and supplies. We're kind of low-key, quiet. We have a great following of knitters. And in the lobby of my shop, I sell fabrics, ribbons, trims, that kind of thing. The yarn shop's also known for a great button collection because I'm as crazy about buttons as I am about beads. So we try to fill all those needs.
Yeah. When I've been in there, it's hard for me to know for certain which part is your shop or shops and where someone else takes over.
I'm the whole first floor of the building.
Ah.
So the lobby, the back space, the bead shop space, there's a children's store upstairs and a tattoo parlor upstairs. And in the very back is the barber shop. I manage the building. I have a co-manager who works with me. So my goal with the James and Hastings building has always been to keep creative people in there. So Michelle upstairs in the kids' store sews, the barber's creative, the tattoo shop does their own work and designs. So we're all creative people in there, and it's great fun.
But you actually manage the building.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's the address?
940 Water Street, corner of Water and Tyler Street.
Okay. A great location, I might say. Great building.
Oh, yeah. I wanted that spot the minute I drove into Port Townsend. I knew that would be.
Last year, took one of these, I don't even know what they called it, but it was a sort of a tour of upstairs spaces in some of the old buildings. And it made me curious, does your building have a haunted upstairs or anything?
We have two floors of apartments above the bead shop and a restaurant bar down below. Yes, I had a paranormal study done on the building about maybe 12 years ago. Yeah, our building is pretty active, including on the third floor where we have a little ghost cat that likes to stay with the tenants.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's pretty active.
Nice. That's good. Well, I was very impressed with that little tour. I mean, I hadn't really thought about, I've heard vague stories, particularly about the Manresa Castle, but I gather there's paranormal activity all over town.
Yeah, I think so.
We obviously have to face the music and face the pandemic. So tell me your story. When did you first think that the pandemic was going to be a big pandemic? Were you floored by it, or did you have some advance warning?
I knew a virus was coming without a cure. I went off to the international jewelry and bead shows down in Tucson, which are the biggest shows in the world, at the end of January, first part of February. Most of the Asian vendors down there and most of the Asian customers were wearing masks in the United States. I'd heard about the virus. I was worried about it, having been married to somebody in the medical field. I took down Clorox wipes and hand sanitizer and was fastidious about cleaning things and washing my hands. I knew it, but I just didn't know how bad it was going to be.
So you came back at the beginning of February. When did you get back to town?
Yes, I got back to town just before Valentine's Day.
Okay. And did you, that was before it really hit here, before the governor made his initial statements and everything. Did you go ahead and take some precautions already, or did you just wait with bated breath to see what was going to happen?
I took some precautions. I knew right away, we've always kept hand sanitizer around, and we've kept our distance from customers during flu season. I'm not a spring chicken. And my former husband was involved with pandemics and things like that. So I kind of knew a little bit. We closed on March 10th. I felt best to keep it closed for a while, and we reopened the first week of June, I think it was. A scary time, but I was safe and kept my employees safe and my customers safe.
Okay. How did it impact you? Did you have to lay off employees?
Oh, yeah. My older employees, of which most of my staff was between 60 and 80 years of age, all wouldn't come back to work, and I didn't even blame them. I had one employee that stayed on in the bead shop and one part-time employee that stayed on in the yarn shop. So I was closed from March 10th to about June 4th, and I had no income. A little bit from my internet sales, but yeah, it was a pretty scary time.
How did you survive? Did you manage to get in on any of the programs that were offered?
Yeah, we were able to get a small PPP loan, which was 75% employee-based and then 25% towards rent and utilities. And then I got a small SBA loan. It was really the SBA loan in the beginning that saved me, that allowed me to pay some of my suppliers and keep my rent current. And then I had the best landlord in the world, the most charitable. I can't say enough good things about him. He really helped me out. He helped my business stay there. If it had been my previous landlord, I wouldn't be there.
Well, it's great to hear that there are good landlords out there. I like to hear happy stories like that. How would you compare this to what happened during the last big recession in 2007, 8, 9? Were you hit by that?
Yeah, we were hit by that. Our income dropped a lot. We went from a staff of 9 employees, I think, down to 4. I just knew with the recession that no matter what, I was just going to march through it. This is my source of income. It's my living. It never occurred to me to close or quit. So I just soldiered on.
When you came back, there are restrictions about what you can do. You, for example, your hours, they've changed, right?
Right. Yeah, I had to cut my hours. We're only able to be open part of the time. So we cut our hours and we cut the number of people that were allowed in the shops at the time because you need to maintain that 6-foot distance. We required masks. We put out hand sanitizer. I can't even begin to tell you how much I've spent on hand sanitizer and sanitary wipes, all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, so we've done all the precautions. I, like our governor, I took him at his word and I did everything they suggested.
That's good. Have you had one of those, or maybe more than one of those, terrible incidents where somebody doesn't want to comply, that refuses to wear a mask?
Yep. The first time was just this past Friday. Local people are great. Visitors have been great in understanding. Most people say thank you for following the precautions. But yeah, I did have that run-in on Friday. It wasn't nice. And of course, she went on and gave me a 1-star review on Google Business. But I had to protect myself, my family, my customers, my employees. It's not just me out there. It's a lot of other people.
Well, I hope if she gave you such a rating, she explained why. And then anyone reading it would say, well, gee, bozo, she wants you to put on a mask. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. Yeah. So I'm not terribly worried about it.
As a store owner, do you watch those ratings like a hawk, or do you just shrug and let it go?
No, don't watch them like a hawk. I'm doing what I love. I invite people to follow me along and do also what I love and encourage them. So no, I don't follow them. I'm just following my passion.
Okay. Now, obviously, we're still, as we're recording this, we're still in the pandemic, yet the town is opening up a bit. Are you seeing a fair return of customers, of tourists from out of town?
Pretty much all my visitors to the area have been regional, from the Seattle side, the Homish, a couple from far eastern Washington, like Spokane. I can probably count the out-of-state people on one hand that have come in since June. It's just pretty much regional traffic, which is nice. A lot of people are saying, my first time in Fort Townsend. What a great getaway. I love over here. I love the building. So I think we are actually forming repeat customers during this time, which I think is a great thing to have.
Interesting. Under normal times, are there a lot of out-of-state or even out-of-country visitors?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we have so many out-of-state visitors and out-of-country visitors that they come back year after year. And every year they come in and say, oh, I was here last summer. Do you remember me? And most of the time, I do. So I'm missing the out-of-country visitors and the out-of-state visitors.
Well, I was listening to some stuff about the airline industry, and, you know, they're obviously hurting, but they're hoping things will turn around. They're making some changes, so who knows? Maybe we will see a return of that. What about the school year versus before school? Do you see a change in clientele once school gets underway?
Yeah, normally in September after school starts, by starting the second weekend of September and through October, we have older visitors, people who come with their RVs, or older visitors who fly into Seattle, rent a car, and drive across the canal and hang out on the Olympic Peninsula. I don't know what to expect this year with schools having no in-person classes, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's hard to say how things are changing. Mm-hmm. I'm just happy to see some things beginning to return. When we were talking the other day, you mentioned that your current husband actually works at the store or does things for the store, like your bookkeeping, things like that. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to find a man like that?
Good question. You know, good single men don't last very long in Fort Townsend, I think.
Right.
I don't know. He worked a regular job before for the first year, the year we were dating, and then the first year we were married, and then we had a child that we weren't expecting. So I looked at him one day and I said, you know, your job is really interfering with my business. You have to quit. So he quit and became the homemaker and my bookkeeper, my light bulb changer, and all of that stuff.
Good, good. All important. I think he took really good care of your son.
Yes, he did. He did a great job. In fact, during the pandemic here, my first experience is going to the grocery store in years. I can't find a thing.
That's pretty funny. And your son is a young adult now. What's he doing?
He is an electrician with Fredrickson Electric here in town. He started immediately after he got out of high school.
Cool. That's a good job to have.
It is a good job, yeah.
And one that will remain in high demand no matter what, right?
Right. That's what we keep telling him. So,
yes.
Yeah, he's on his way to getting his commercial certification.
Okay, so stand back for a second. What's really your plan for staying afloat?
A wing and a prayer. A wing and a prayer. I'm hoping that customers come in. I encourage customers to call me and email me. It's all new business. I can't teach classes right now. I can't have people come to my warehouse or come to my studio. I'm going to keep improving my website and keep improving my online presence through social media. I'm going to keep my shop open and just be my usual self and just keep the interest alive and beads and talk to people and be friendly. Brush up on my tech skills because I'm pretty much a dinosaur. I'd be lost without my webmaster. That's my plan and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Well, I think a shop like yours, so much of it is the personality. You're the driving personality behind it, and it's sort of you and your enthusiasm that helps sell what you've got going. I mean,
I think that's
really important. But I want to ask you sort of a side question. I know, like most entrepreneurs, you work day and night, 24/7, but you must have a little bit of time off. What do you do outside?
I have a small garden. I do a little bit of gardening. I do a little bit of reading. My son hooked me up with Netflix, so I've kind of become a fan of Netflix. But usually the whole time I'm doing other things, I'm really at home making things. That's what I do. I paint. I have painting rocks today. I'm sewing. I'm going to figure out how to sew a mask because I'm not a sewer. I made jewelry before I came to speak to you today, and I'll go back out there and continue to make jewelry. So that's my recreation. I'll take a walk and run my dog around the yard, and that pretty much takes care of the day.
Okay, I've always wondered this about artists, and particularly jewelry. How do you part with some of it? Sometimes does it sort of break your heart if someone buys one of your favorite things?
Making me laugh because I am the queen of jewelry. I have so much I have kept over the years that I cannot possibly ever wear it all. Some days I have to look at myself in the mirror and say, okay, Lois, go back in the house and take half of that stuff off. I give it away to friends. I sell it in the shop. I'm lucky enough right now, I'm blessed enough that I can make down in a day and make a ton of inventory. I love jewelry. I've always loved jewelry. I can't help it. There are pieces that I think when I make a necklace or I make a pair of earrings in the store, that piece, no matter how long it takes, waits for its rightful owner to come in. There's a certain energy that moves around the piece that I've made. It might sit for 3 months, and then suddenly a couple of people will look at it and say, no, I'm not going to get that. And I know within a day or two, the rightful owner will pop in and say, I've got to have that piece. Huh. And then I take care of my things. If they bought it from me and I made it, I'll always fix it for them. So that makes them very happy too.
Has there ever been a piece, maybe more than one, where you make it and you say, wow, this is so beautiful, I've got to keep it for myself?
Oh, of course. I've got stuff on today that I made that I had to keep for myself. Yeah. And I make it for my kids and grandkids. And last night I was really pleased because I had a sketchbook and I determined to finish every page in the book with a sketch. And last night I did that. And I have an online site for my drawings and through Facebook, and I have filled that sketchbook. So I'm feeling pretty pleased today.
So do you think you would ever retire, or is it just too much fun?
It's too much fun. I don't want to retire. I want to do this forever. And hopefully I'll be blessed enough to do it for at least another 10 or 15 or 20 years. As long as my vision and hands and brain work, I think I'll keep doing it. I think even if I didn't have a shop, I think I'd still be making things, selling them. That's all I've ever wanted to do, was to make things.
It's pretty obvious to me that when you first came to Port Townsend, you sort of fell in love with it. And here, all these years later, are you still in love with it? And what do you like about it?
Absolutely. I love Port Townsend. I love the scenery. Everybody cites that. The salt water, the people, the buildings, the energy, the creative people here. I just love Port Townsend. I love it. I absolutely love it.
And it's obviously changed over the years. Are there changes that you still would like to see happen?
I would like to see the buildings taken better care of. I think some of them are in desperate need of repair and caring landlords, although I know that's really expensive. I like that the sidewalks are cleaned up and that there's rain gardens. I'd like to see some parking enforcement during the height of the tourist season. I love the people downtown walking. I think we are blessed to have a community where you can have a cup of coffee, watch a movie, eat lunch, shop some shops, look at the beach, sit on the beach and meditate. We are beyond blessed with all of that.
That's for sure. Well, Lois, I want to thank you for being on the show. We're out of time. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Lois Benarchik, the owner of Wynwood's Gallery. Lois told me earlier, closing is so not an option. Another good quote from her was, we're tightening our buckles, which is great. We will all get through this. In addition to thanking Lois, I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, editor and producer of Our Town. He will manage to distill what we're saying so that we sound ever so intelligent and eloquent. We're still not able to use our good equipment, so our quality of sound is not quite up to it. But remember, folks, it's the content that matters. All of us here at KPTZ would really like to return to some form of normal. So listeners, stay safe, stay healthy. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.